So, how was the great Twitter outage of July 11th going for you?
Well, Patrick sent me a message and said, is Twitter down for you? I said, I don't know, I can't check because I can't get on Twitter.
It's incredible how we all, like people in the tech industry, all use Twitter for...
to check when things are down.
And check for news, even at that basic level. So, speaking of news, a broadcasting note. I am handling podcasting duties from Steven for the next few weeks. So you can expect a rotating cast of the co-host, starting with Ben.
Hello.
Hi. So let's start this right off with the big news of this week being Android Q Beta 5.
Yep.
I know some people expected it last week, but it being July 4th, the day after, Google mercifully gave us another another week's reprieve. So, Android Q Beta 5, what is your biggest feature?
What is my biggest feature? The thing that probably I spent the most time on was the new peaking behavior, because it's stupid and annoying.
Yes.
And it was impossible to get it to turn on.
How do you actually use this? Because I still haven't got it up and running, to be truthful.
Okay, so peaking in Android Q, they announced it a few weeks ago as a way to open the app drawer without having to use the slide. Since they introduced the new gestures, you've been able to slide down at an angle to access the app drawers without triggering the back gesture. To do that in an official way, Google's idea is you hold on the very, very leftmost side of the screen and it will start to open the drawer. In theory, that should work fine. In practice, it doesn't work at all. I spent about 20 minutes just trying to get that to happen in a collection of apps like Twitter and Slack and the Play Store. And then I spent another 20 minutes trying to get a video of that. But it's very, it's not polished at all. It really doesn't work that well. And I think Google should just tell everyone to start using the sliding gesture to go down, because that works really reliably.
Okay, so yes, yeah, it works every single time, but at the same at the same time, that is such an awkward way to do it, especially if you have a curved screen. The going down diagonally feels very weird.
You know, I didn't even think about that because none of the Pixels have curved screens.
No, it's kind of curve-ish.
I'm just thinking about that now on like Samsung and OnePlus.
Yeah,
that'd be awful.
We're still, I don't know. Google said at the public release of Android Q is coming out in Q3, so we have 2 months. But it's and it's going to be very interesting how other people do it, how Samsung and OnePlus are going to skin it, because OnePlus definitely has their own system for them and they don't mind putting their take on Android, but Samsung will be the real decider, because honestly I expect them to stick with the 3-button nav.
Yeah, so Samsung's gestures are actually the 3-button nav, but instead of pressing you swipe, which I guess kind of works. But the thing is, they have to also adopt Google's, because in Android Q you have to have, every OEM has to have, at the very least, they have to have Google's gestures and the 3-button nav.
So is it the option? Does it have to be enabled by default, I guess, is the big key? Yeah.
One of those two has to be enabled by default, and both of them have to be on the phone.
Hmm.
But then they can also add whatever they want.
And knowing Samsung, they'll do whatever they want.
They'll probably include the three swipes again, which... in all honesty, is not the worst solution.
Yeah.
It looks super ugly because there's no animations to go with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it works.
Yeah. And in terms of polish, would you say it's better than what Google has right now in Beta 5?
I wouldn't say in terms of polish. I would say in terms of it doesn't break anything.
That's fair.
Except for Assistant, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. So Assistant does not work with those gestures.
Yeah. So yeah, gestures. You wrote about how it's the experience is more fluid, and that's a very good sign going forward. But as other people have mentioned, it's kind of worrisome that we're at beta 5. We have one more beta coming up, and then the final release, obviously. And it's the polish isn't there. Google's really bringing it down to the wire. And I think what most of us are afraid of is what happens if it doesn't get polished until like the Pixel 4 comes out. That's where Google's really polishing its experience for the Pixel 4, and every other phone as a result suffers. That would be very unfortunate.
Well, to some extent, that's what we saw with Pi, because the gestures there didn't get... They never felt finished until the Pixel 3.
Oh yeah.
Maybe that's just because we were forced into them.
Yeah, maybe. But that was a very consequential move. Mm-hmm. And this is Google back to back doing it for a second year. So I'm obviously a fan. I've mentioned this before. I'm a fan of the two button to have, personally.
I like it too.
I see nothing wrong with it. And it is polished at this point in Pi. And I am worried about what regular people who buy Pixels, who are increasingly buying Pixels, what happens if they get for 2 years in a 2 years in a row, they get a back-to-back transitions going on, that they have to run an entirely new system.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe Google will keep the two button around on the Pixel 4, but consider, I think they said at I/O that they weren't going to support it any further.
That's...
So I guess the question will be is if when Android Q gets its final release, will the two buttons still be on the Pixel 3?
On the Pixel 3?
Like if it goes away on the Pixel 3, that kind of answers the question.
For the Pixel 4, definitely. I don't think... Do they really remove features once it's on your phone? I think Google's been pretty good about not removing anything.
Yeah, because they didn't remove the 3 button from the Pixel 2. Mm. So I would assume they would keep it around, but it's Google, so you never know.
Yes, indeed. You never ever know. And I guess another thing to consider is how, according to Google, their Pixel theme is completely isolated from the Android theme. So if the user experience people on the Pixel team think that this is not ready, who knows, maybe they might stick to their own thing.
It's entirely possible. I can't imagine they would get away with it, though.
No, they won't. They need to, because the press, the backlash from the public, from fans, would be your own first party thing isn't using the navigation system you just designed. That would be a horrific consequence. So yeah, that's for gesture navigation. Which is, as you pointed out, now gesture navigation, not a fully gestural navigation,
which was a horrible name.
Quite a mouthful.
That was awful.
I don't think I heard the word gestural before I saw it in Android Q.
Come to think of it, I don't think I did either.
It's a word, right? It's an actual word, right?
I would assume so.
Spellcheck never corrects me on it, so I think
it is an art term.
It's an art term. Okay. Okay, Google. Okay.
Set off someone's Google Home.
Apologies. So I guess the next big thing here is the assistant gestures, which is Google added what they're calling handles to the bottom right corners of the Pixel screen. To activate Assistant, you swipe up diagonally. It takes quite a while, actually, in my opinion. And then you get the full Assistant panel. This is... They need a way to... Google obviously needs a way to launch Assistant on Android. Mm-hmm. But this is... I'm not sure if this is... It just lacks polish, which is understandable. But this doesn't seem elegant. This... seems really, really rough Looks pretty.
Yeah, so for me, it's... I understand how they're why they're doing this one, because there's really no other good way to do this. I was talking with a couple of people yesterday about it, and one of them who loves his iPhone says, oh, they should just do what Apple does with, you know, press the power button and edit, and that wouldn't work on Android at all.
No.
But I like the way they... I actually like the little assistant gesture.
Oh.
Now. In beta 3, beta 4, it was awful, it was unreliable, and you had to do it at the angle.
Yeah.
Now you can do it. Like, I've gotten to the point where I can just swipe and it works. It's just as fluid to me as swiping up to go home.
That's fair. This to me, it seems like it's a real drag. It's really not instant.
I've gotten to the point where it's just like that.
Yeah, that's fortunate.
I think it's a learning curve.
It's a learning curve. Yeah.
Which I think the whole gestures are on Android Q.
Yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of pop-ups on the Pixel 4.
Oh man, I haven't even considered that. Yeah, and ultimately, again, it's a very pretty animation that ties in directly with the shorter assistant panel that Google plans to do. But
yeah,
so far, it's like everything could use some polish. And so with the next generation assistant that Google essentially confirms is coming to the Pixel 4 at I.O., you can... Google shows a transcript of what you're saying. Continuous conversation is always active on phones. And for this release, we got our first indication that the way Google was doing it is that text, when you use Active Edge, text appears in the middle. So presumably in the bottom middle of the screen, just above the gesture nav pill. So presumably that's where Google is going to put the voice transcript when you're using this next-gen assistant. We've been waiting to know how they're going to do it, especially with when they switch up the navigation systems. But I think that's going to work out just fine, visually.
Honestly, I think it's too small of a spot, especially because, as I only noticed this yesterday as I was trying to take pictures of what was happening.
Yeah, yes.
That text is, unless you're on the home screen, that text gets cut off.
Yeah, it 100% gets cut off.
Even if it is perfectly centered. So basically, unless you're on the home screen, unless Google changes it somehow, unless you're on the home screen, it's going to cut off everything you're doing.
Yeah.
My only thought is maybe it's going to pull that transparent design that we saw a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like an altered version of that will just pop up over what you're doing when you're doing that transcription.
Yeah, it has to. That's the safest way for them to do it. But it's very visible in a way that Google's trying to make this next generation assistant invisible. So they so the way they're doing it now, you're right. It's hard to see, and I would even wager on the home screen, it conflicts so much with the bottom search bar, with the Pixel Launcher search field. And it, like you said, it doesn't improve as you go to other apps. So this is another design problem Google has to solve for to have a very exciting feature actually work and launch correctly. So fingers crossed on that though, on Assistant.
Yeah, and I think that one is probably the least of their worries. I think that one's not super difficult to figure out.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, the back gesture.
Oh, yeah, the back gesture. A central tenet of using your phone is going back, and we still got nothing. Still don't have the final design. So, I think we covered gestures to death. Silent notifications are now split into the bottom section of the shade, so there's the Google app does weather notifications sometimes, and that goes automatically to the bottom. visually, it's a bit long. Like, the list is getting really long
now. It is, but I think this was a really good solution. Like, actually, thinking about this, it might be one of my favorite changes in Beta 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes it really clear when you're keeping a notification silent versus one that's doing something. Because now also, if you long press on a notification, you can quickly switch it between alerting and silent. And now it's very obvious what the distinction is between those two. Because silent doesn't mean it's one of the small notifications anymore. It means it's going in this section. Because, like, for example, if I had my Twitter followers muted, but I had everything else from Twitter alerting. So it put all my follower notifications down in the bottom section, out of the way where it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
But it kept everything that I cared about up in that top section.
Yeah. And Google is really trying to get users to manage their notifications. It's a common complaint. Everybody gets too many notifications, and I don't know how most people do it, but I think I have a tendency, if it is a long list of notifications, I just automatically expand the list to see how many I have to scroll down the list. So that's kind of contrary to how I do it. But yeah, I think for the most part, most people benefit from prioritization.
Yeah, I think this is a good solution just because you don't have to really go in and you don't have to go into settings and do all this stuff to change it.
Yeah.
It's just when a notification comes in, if you think, oh, in the future I don't need it like this, you can just long press it, switch it, done.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's a good solution, and it's not in the way like the one-way swipe was in beta, the earlier betas.
Oh man, that was a scandal. That was a controversy.
Yeah, that was a bad idea. But I think this, if it stayed like this and launched like this, I'd be happy.
Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that might be one of the low-key, most popular features of Android Q. At least something that people will notice immediately the first time they use their phone. So, screen pinning now works with gesture navigation. Honestly, I've used it so much less because of two-button nav, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you use it?
The last time I used it was my roommate needed to use my phone to cast Netflix.
Okay.
So I pinned Netflix to the screen and gave him the phone. And that was the last time I used it, which is kind of the use case for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I use on a regular basis, but I'm glad it still works.
Yeah. Again, like, the feature would really shine on tablets if Android on tablets were more of a bigger thing.
Yeah, it would be
a
pretty amazing tablet feature. And it was an amazing tablet feature.
It was an amazing thing. Yeah, the once was. Oh, we can add that. The Pixel C has officially stopped receiving security patches. So
that's right.
Farewell, odd-shaped, metallic tablet.
I still love that tablet.
Yeah, it's basic. I think it's like a generic idea of what a tablet is, and I think most people are fine with that.
Yep. Also, best keyboard ever on a tablet.
Oh man, yeah, that was, yeah, you're right, that was a very good keyboard. Down to the hinge system was the best part, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Just slap it down
and
bring it up.
Wirelessly charged.
Wirelessly charged. Yeah, Google should
display.
Bring that back. That should have been the Pixel Slate, the future Pixel Slate tablets that got killed, or rumored to be.
Mm-hmm. If they still took the Pixel C and just threw Chrome OS on it and sold it now, I think it'd still do amazing, because the Pixel Slate's biggest issue was that the keyboard, you couldn't use it on your lap because it wasn't stable enough.
Mm-hmm.
That one was definitely stable enough.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame.
And it's honestly a shame that nobody hacked Chrome OS on it.
Yeah, that is surprising, actually.
I definitely remember projects to do that. But, again, it never took off. Oh, yeah. I guess we should close out Android Q before we start reminiscing about the Pixel C some more. So that's beta 5, as we said at the top of the show, one more to go. Compared to later years, I think there's so much in flux that it's going to be a nail biter with so many changes up to the very end. So
I agree.
That's going to be an exciting round.
I feel like there's been more in the betas this year than any other two.
Yeah. Previous years by beta 5, well, beta 5 would have been the last one. There was barely anything notable. There was barely anything that warranted its own post for us.
Yeah.
But now it's they were still going strong. So good for us. Questionable for the stability and the final polish for Google, maybe, but oh well. So, moving on, the Pixel 4, the delightful Pixel 4. So we have renders of the Pixel 4 XL, I believe. And, well, it's the forehead is, if this is the accurate forehead, it's notable. It's notable in that it's not notable, and it's kind of small. It's the Pixel 2 XL, a source once told you.
Yeah. I think it looks totally fine. I have absolutely no issue with that design. I will gladly use it and buy it. It's less... I mean, I think with the amount of sensors that Google has in the phone this year, they definitely couldn't do a notch and push some of the stuff up into that top bezel.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the only things you would push up there are the time and like two icons. So it wouldn't be worth it.
No, not at all.
Because you can't do an iPhone 10 style notch on Android and make it still a good experience.
No, it's status bar notifications, thankfully, are a thing on Android.
Yes, so I think this is a good way of doing it. People are still going to complain because there is a bezel, because I think everyone has the wrong opinion on that. But I think this is a good design. It's a practical design.
Yes.
And we don't get enough of that anymore. Instead, we get cameras that pop out of the top and little bits of display that we can't use for anything. And all this other stuff, just to get a little bit more screen.
Yeah, which
all for no reason.
Yeah, the trade-off is definitely hasn't felt that it's worth it. But the fact that Google is going back to they're getting rid of the notch after a year is quite funny to me, because I definitely remember coming out of last year's event, Google saying something along the lines of, if we had the space, they would have put the notch on the Pixel 3 or something like that. I forgot the exact arguments, but they were basically, they really did make it seem that the notch was going to proliferate everywhere across their phone line. And thankfully, as a person who never got the notch, it doesn't seem to be doing that.
I've never been a fan of the notch, but I understood the practicality of it.
Yeah.
Because, like, the Pixel 3, it's big enough to be annoying, but it's just small enough to where it actually does give you a benefit in regular use, because you get more screen. More usable screen. Because all the status bar stuff is pushed up to the top. But it's either way. I think the Pixel 4 is a very practical design. I just hate that there's no fingerprint sensor on the back of it.
Yeah. The reason we're all assuming that's the case is because they're switching to Face ID to a face match, excuse me. But at the same time, why not include a fingerprint sensor as well? It's Google isn't a company afraid to throw in the entire throw in the entire boat or something. It's been a long week.
Everything but the kitchen sink.
Everything but the kitchen sink. Thank you. It's been a very long week.
And, yes, it has.
And I guess the back is cleaner, but who cares? It was just a tiny circle.
I think it's a shame that the back is cleaner because there's no window.
There's no window, and we have an ugly square thing.
Like, I'm genuinely going to miss the window. I picked up the Pixel 2 XL yesterday, and I still think that's the best-looking Pixel they ever made, just because of the black and white with the window.
Okay, so
I'm really sad that's going away.
That cover only. I do not think the Pixel 2 XL is the best Pixel they ever made in general with the other covers.
In that color, it is the best one they ever made.
Oh, definitely. But I wonder if this is going to spark conspiracy theories, this cycle that Google put in an in-fingerprint display sensor.
It already did. Long time ago.
Oh no.
There was nothing concrete about it ever. It was all just, you know, those leaks that are basically, I heard from this guy. But yeah, I mean, there were plenty of people saying, oh, it's going to have an in display, which it could.
It could.
I doubt it because they're all awful.
Yeah, they're all awful. And
the only one that's been good in my experience so far is the OnePlus 7 Pro. It's marginally slower than a capacitive sensor,
mm-hmm.
and barely less accurate. I would say it's it doesn't feel slower in daily use, and it's if a regular fingerprint sensor is 9 out of 10, that one's 8 out of 10.
Okay, that's pretty high. Is the OnePlus 7 Pro is still using an optical sensor? Correct?
Yes, it is still using optical.
So have ultrasonic sensors like kind of burned out? Are they going to get better?
Samsung is the only one I've ever used, and that was the worst. Okay, I can't say the worst. The worst was the Nokia 9. That fingerprint sensor was like 2 out of 10.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
I got that phone in. I was going to try to do a review on it. I couldn't even use it long enough.
Oh, man.
Because that sensor was that bad. And the Face ID was not good either.
Awesome.
But Samsung's was accurate. It got it right most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably took 3 times as long to get into my phone.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's not worth the trade-off of future.
And it gets worse if you put a screen protector on it, which I do, because apparently I can't use a phone without scratching it anymore.
Oh, I'm go naked all the way.
I have now scratched my second Pixel 3 XL with a big, deep, ugly scratch.
I will, with screen protectors especially, I will stand by that they are Ponzi schemes because they are too hard to put on. And that's why they include 3 in the box, because you always mess up the first one. They're scams.
Well,
neither here nor there.
They do their job for me.
Okay. So yeah, the Pixel 4, I think that's a pretty good look for now, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fine phone, design-wise.
Hopefully. As long as they don't mess up the performance this time.
The performance. They have to put in more RAM. We're pretty far along.
Yeah, it's got I mean, based on everything we've seen, it's 6 gigs, which is enough.
Yeah, it's enough.
It's kind of like this whole Wear OS situation that we're going to talk about in a minute, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's like, yes, they work on this amount of RAM, but if you add more, it's 10 times better immediately. So hopefully Google gets that message and puts 6 gigs at least in the Pixel 4. I would love 8, but I don't see that happening. Just as a message, basically.
Just as a message, yeah.
But hopefully.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the TicWatch Pro. I think it got a bit... Its news was a bit quiet because of the... Android Q Beta 5 stuff, mm-hmm. later in the day, but you've had this for a month. How is this the best Wear OS watch?
Well, it's actually very simple, and it comes down to the RAM. Because this watch, which I'm still wearing right now, it has the same Snapdragon 2100 that every Wear OS watch has had for, what, 4 years now?
Sounds about right.
Which is still ridiculous. But the only thing this really changes is, for one thing, Mobvoi understands how to make Wear OS run just a little bit better.
Interesting.
Because the TicWatch C2 and the new E2 and S2 all run better than most Wear OS watches. I don't know why. They're doing something behind the scenes that just they run a little bit better.
Would you say that about would you also say that compared to the watch style and the?
I never used the watch style. I did use the watch Sport.
Sport, yes.
I don't know. It's been too long to.
Yeah, it's
been too long to know. But like my Fossil Sport, which had a 3100 versus the TicWatch C2, which had a 2100, the C2 was always better.
Yeah.
But now they've taken that and they've put it on the TicWatch Pro 4G, which also has twice as much RAM at 1 GB. It is easily the best performing Wear OS watch that you can buy right now because it doesn't lag. It doesn't drop frames very often. And everything loads quicker. I put a GIF in my hands-on where I took the original TicWatch Pro and then the 4G, put them side by side, and I opened up the settings menu. And you can visibly see in the GIF that it takes probably twice as long on the original.
Yeah. Which is
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very incredible how in 2019, Wear OS as a platform is still subject to so basic specs. It's the hardware is still the defining characteristic of performance, and we don't really know. Well, Wear OS as a platform, how performant is it? How efficient is it really?
On the 4G, I think I don't mind using it one bit. I think it's as fast. I can't say as fast as an Apple Watch.
No,
it's one not. Because the only Apple Watch I own is the not the first gen, but not the
Series One.
Yes, the Series One.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so far back that now it doesn't perform well. But I can say it's as fast as most of Samsung's.
Most of Samsung's. That's a.
Tizen. At least on this. Yeah, on Tizen.
Yeah.
But like the biggest difference I ever saw was Google Assistant. Because on the Fossil Sport, I can't tell you how many times I've actually tried to use Google Assistant on it. And the watch goes back to sleep before the microphone starts recording. On the TicWatch, I press the button, it comes up, and it's already recording.
Yeah. Well, the fact that
you can. Yeah, so like that immediately shows me every Wear OS watch should have 1 GB of RAM.
Yeah.
At least. And we've seen it before, but it's been in Louis Vuitton and Tag Heuer and all the other $1,000 plus watches.
Yeah, the Montblanc Summit 2.
Summit 2. Yep.
That is everybody wants that. Everybody wants that.
Yeah.
But
I'm genuinely curious how well that one performs because it's got a gig of RAM and the 3100.
Yeah, but I guess we'll talk about this in a second. But the 30 Google. Yeah, let's talk about this now. So the 3100 was announced last fall, and all the watch, two watches have that: the Fossil Sport and the Smart Product Summit 2. However,
and the Louis Vuitton.
Oh, really? Yes, I remember that now. So those three watches.
They updated an old one.
Yeah, no. So those three watches. However, they're not running Pi. They're not even running Pi yet. System H, where was this current naming conventions? They're still on the previous version, and they don't get any benefits of the power saving features that System H really introduced, and that performs really well. So I think what that reveals is that Google hasn't bothered to optimize Wear OS for System 8 for the 3100 yet, and that's shocking. What else are they doing? What are they doing? If 2100 is clearly their bread and butter, 4 years in, I hope they can really optimize the hell out of it. But this is your newest chip. This is your flagship chip or whatever, and we still haven't seen any System H updates for those three watches yet.
Nope. My Fossil Sport sitting in front of me still doesn't have any of that stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's very unfortunate. I think more broadly, the fact that it's on three watches kind of paints a disappointing picture of... Is... Like the 3100 clearly isn't going to save Wear OS, despite whatever hype it may have had.
It was never going to, because it's literally a 2100 that they said, here's a little extra piece of hardware inside.
Yeah.
So that's all it was.
Yeah, just that. And nothing... Well, I guess the watch faces take advantage of that, right?
The watch faces, but basically they can just show color and the clock hand can move smoother.
Who cares?
Which, nobody. Yeah, exactly. No one cares about that. You could do that on the 2100, it just took more battery.
Yeah, and it's not worth it. So, yeah, this 3100... I guess the big question right now is Fossil is rumored to be prepping their Gen 5 watches. If... Sticking with the 2100 is not out of the realm of possibility here.
No, it's not.
It would be truly shocking if they went, if they kept with 2100, but on the 3100 hasn't proven itself as doing anything significant, as offering anything significantly more.
Mm-mm. No, like I said, the Tic watches that I had that were running on 2100s ran better than my Fossil Sport on a 3100. I had a Fossil Q Explorist and a Diesel watch, both of which had more software installed on them than the Sport, and they both performed equally as well. So the 3100 did nothing except for the watch only mode, which that's actually a genuinely useful thing.
Yeah. But yeah,
like I've used that on trips and stuff to, you know, I go on the airplane, I turn that on. That's genuinely useful, but it's not worth being a new chipset and a new, and only being on three watches, two of which cost over $1,000.
Yeah. So speaking of chipsets, there's this rumor this week that Qualcomm is readying a new Snapdragon Wear 429 chip. Their first modern, efficient chip for Wear OS in, again, 4 years. Because at this point, none of us are really counting 3100 as a significant advancement. So, again, with Wear OS, it's always looking for the next thing, and this is the next thing. So, on paper, it sounds like this is a significant upgrade, that it's using a smaller shrink, which will read the power enhancements. It's based on the Snapdragon 429, which has more performance, 64-bit support, Cortex A53 cores, which are again an improvement over what we've been doing at the 2100, and the possibility of 8 gigs of RAM. So it's storage. No, my bad, storage.
8 gigs of RAM
on a watch. Imagine,
I mean,
that'd
be awesome.
It would have an hour of battery life. An hour of battery life. God, that'd be amazing. I want to see that, though. 8 gigs of RAM on...
Yeah.
Oh, how many years are we out from that? Like, realistically.
Well, it took us 5 years to go from 512 megabytes to a gig. Hmm. So...
That's...
Possibly the end of our lives.
Yeah, why not? Let's go there. But like, in terms of like, I definitely see Android putting 8 gigs of RAM on a watch. I definitely see that as a thing happening.
OnePlus.
Oh, they never made their watch. They teased the watch, but they never made a wireless watch, which is a shame. They could have put their optimizations to use, but maybe they also saw it as a doomed platform. Oh well.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is, according to the report from Win Future, this is still in the early stages of development, and we don't know when it's coming out, but I doubt we're going to see it this year on any new watches. The watches this year's, this generation's, these Falls watches are already gone to FCC certification, so this is still next year at the earliest, but even the year after that is a possibility, maybe.
I'd say we could probably see this in the spring maybe.
Next year.
Yeah. I think it's possible. Because, I mean, realistically let's think, the 3100 was announced in September, And then the Fossil Sport came out a month later.
Yeah.
I don't even think it was a month later. So I could see that.
I guess we'll see.
In his report, Roland from WinFuture, he wasn't very confident. He said he might not be ready till next year. But the biggest question I still have from this is, what does that mean about Google's watch, which is rumored to come out at made by Google in so a couple months?
I do that. That's happening. We can.
I would hope.
Yeah,
not.
At this point, it's nothing. Again, the 3100 doesn't promise anything notable, and the real problem with Wear OS right now is hardware. It's just down to specs and feeds.
Yeah. Unless Google has been very quietly working on their own chip, which I don't want a situation where we're getting Wear OS on a Pixel Watch that's getting updates because it's using Google's chip, and then none of that stuff hits any other Wear OS watches, or takes forever to do so. I don't want that to happen, but at the same time, Qualcomm seems like it just doesn't care about the chipsets in watches, because, again, they waited 4 years, and then they released a new chip that was the same chip, which was based on a chip that was still, that was old when they made the original one.
Yeah, it's...
So, I mean, we're talking about a 7-year-old chip.
Yeah,
at this point.
Sold for $300. It's a...
Yep.
Real shame.
It's... Yeah, so I can't imagine Google's going to use that.
This new...
But sadly, yet, I don't think they could be... Oh, that's a lot of thunder.
Didn't come off.
They could... There's no way they're using this new Qualcomm chip, but I can't imagine they're going
to
use an old
Qualcomm
chip.
They have to,
They would if they would release something this year. But I guess it's also possible they could say, you know, they could show it off at Made by Google, say, this is coming.
But at the same time, we would all automatically dub it as the next Pixel Slate, as the spiritual success of the Pixel Slate. It's not a good look waiting to release your product. It's really not a good look. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think how what we've heard could line up with what we know. And that's the only way I could think of it, but hopefully not. Anyway, speaking of things that were announced and we had to wait a while, the JBL Link Bar finally came out this week.
This is a built-in sound bar with Android TV built in. It generally does some cool assist stuff. With audio, with HDMI routing and all that. And $399, correct? It was showed off at last year's I.O., is that correct? Or was it last year's I.O.?
Yes.
I remember playing with it, actually. Steven and I got a demo. And it's impressive from the perspective of it just works, but it's a really basic thing to just work.
Mm-hmm. But it's even more confusing when you think it's been 14 months and it's been delayed four times and now it's finally here. And I saw so many people comment on different articles about it and Reddit and stuff saying they're not going to buy it till reviews come out, because who knows if they actually fixed whatever was wrong this whole time.
Could it be soft? I guess at this delays at this scale are usually hardware related rather than software.
Yeah, it's got to be hardware related, because the software that they're I mean, I've never played with one in person, but the software that they're using here seems like it's basically what an Android TV, with a screen, would have. Because I think, if I remember right, it's Philips. They have an Android TV that, you know, you plug your HDMI stuff in, it does pass through and all that. But then when you turn the TV off, it still works as an assistant speaker. Which I don't know why more people don't do that, because it's really cool.
It would be automatically the best speaker in your house.
Yeah. But that's basically what the link bar is doing, except it doesn't have a screen. It's just putting it up to the whatever TV you connect it to. But yeah, clearly something was very wrong because they waited forever to do it. I'm trying to get my hands on one because I very much want to try it out.
Performance. I'm curious about the Android TV performance. Like, but this is 14-month-old hardware, and I know where Android TV doesn't get frequent processor refreshes, but at the same time, you're buying another product. No.
Yeah, well, kind of comes, like, I think with the Shield TV, that's running on... The processor was refreshed a little bit, but it's been using the same processor since 2015. Mm-hmm. And it still runs great.
I do have to... I think for that, we have to give a lot of credit to NVIDIA being able to control the entire stack. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice if more companies were able to do that, but chips are hard.
Yeah. So, I guess we will find out. I never saw anything about what this is running on, but I assume it's like one of the Amlogic chips or something that we
and
see.
Cheap, yeah.
All of the other Android TV, like the Sony TVs and stuff. So,
I guess we have one last gadget to talk about, and it's another vendor, the Galaxy Note 10. We have our best look at it yet.
Yes. So the Galaxy Note 10, it's coming out on August 7th. That's when the event will be in New York City. But it's basically, it's a lot like the S10. You know, it's a little bit taller than what came before. Well, it's a little bit shorter than what came before it, but there's a lot more screen. It's got three cameras. This time they're vertically oriented, and then there's a punch hole on the front for the selfie camera, and this time it's in the center. So the renders that came out this week are basically what we've been seeing float around for the past few months. But with this, these look like the renders that Samsung's going to give out when they announce the phone. So this is definitely what we're getting. There's no headphone jack, as a lot of people are not happy about.
Whatever.
And there's this gradient color variant, which is apparently silver. But that it looks a lot like what Huawei was doing last year. I think it looks great.
Oh, yeah.
But that's, so it looks, it's definitely the most, I think it's probably the biggest change we've seen note to note, except maybe from the note, what was it, note 5 to the note 8.
Yeah.
Skip cover. Because the 7,
So yeah.
But I think it looks fine. It seems like they're definitely using another in-display fingerprint sensor, which is probably a bad idea. And they're probably going to include face unlock again, and because it's just a single camera, it's going to be highly inaccurate and easy to fool.
August 7th, so that's going to start off the fall launches. In earnest, so that's one thing to look forward to. And let's just round out a quick few news items. So this week, YouTube for Fire TV came out, while Amazon Prime for Chromecast and Android TV also happened. So this is finally.
Which, finally.
It honestly seemed like I know Google and Amazon announced solved the differences, but it honestly seemed like it's been taking so long. What's happening? Why are they doing this?
Because it's also like this is the second time this has happened where they've said, "All right, we're gonna work together, we're gonna do stuff," and then we waited and we waited, and then things got worse. But this time it actually happened, and kind of out of nowhere.
I wonder what the impetus was. YouTube.
I think at most probably Prime Day, just because now they can say, "Hey, you can get a Fire TV cheap," and now it has YouTube.
YouTube runs the world, doesn't it? Oh wells. Yeah.
So.
And I guess the on a closing note, we suggest that you read Steven's fantastic editorial, I would call it, his screed of passion, titled simply, "It's okay for Google to kill your favorite features. In fact, they must." So this is my TLDR was, that activated assistant. Google kills stuff, get over it, they need to do it. And Stephen very concisely explains why that is needed.
Yeah, and it's something that people need to read it, just because they need to realize that they may not agree with everything he's saying, but he's not wrong, because for Google to keep making new stuff, or just to improve their current stuff, they have to eventually kill some things. And just because you use it doesn't mean that anyone else
these
does.
These companies, we think them as omnipotent entities, but no, they're people. And sometimes they're...
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's not that many people. They have tens of thousands of employees with the same name. They're all doing things which can't cater to your every whim, basically. It's the resource constraint. That one thing people don't realize about big companies is they're extremely resource constrained. They're in many ways operating like a startup, just trying to get things over the finish line, to finalize things, to polish things. And this is why they sometimes have to kill products, kill features even. So yeah, thank you, Ben, and thank you for our audience for joining us. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record the podcast every Thursdays of the summer and should be publishing Friday morning. You can find us all on all of your favorite podcasting platforms: iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, and Google Play. And you can listen on our site, 9to5google.com. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to Ben again. See you next week. Bye.